Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
Don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school is really paid off.
Ooh, we are back. Sorry, call me off guard there. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And we are very excited. Here we are in the middle of the dog days of summer. Middle of August. Things are happening. Had some very active trade season.
Still going. Still active. Still hot.
Still active. For sure, but there was definitely a lot of movement this year.
Unless you're on the San Francisco Giants, and then virtually no movement at all.
There was no movement. There's absolutely nothing happened with the Giants. They stayed pat. They did not move anyone. They did not acquire anyone.
Why not?
I don't know. honestly, I don't know. It seems like there were moves to be made, but I guess their front office team figured they're good enough to be 500, and they wanted to stay below the luxury tax this year, and so mission accomplished.
The mission of not wanting to win is accomplished.
Well, the mission of not wanting to go over the luxury tax
for
baseball, that was accomplished.
Right.
No one really said that they wanted to win this year.
Got to pay to play, baby.
They only have top five payroll in baseball as it is.
Right. And it's, well, so that's the thing. If you're going to be paid, you might as well get something for it. We all know the infamous $62 million man that's not doing much. But, you know, you still got to make some moves. Because nowadays, and I don't know, maybe it's always been like this, but it seems like if you don't make some kind of move, you're telling your team that, nah, we give up kind of thing, right?
I don't know if it's necessarily a give up in the sense that they didn't sell. I'd say, they may figure that they're close enough to the wild card that they still have a reasonable mathematic shot of doing it. But at this point in the season, when you're a 500 team, you're a 500 team. Right. They win 3-4 in a row, they lose 2-3 in a row. They win 2-3 in a row, they lose 3-4 in a row.
And that's why you bolster your lineup or your pen or your rotation to get those four game to like a six game, one game kind of thing.
Yes, but we'll talk about this a little bit later too, but there is stat out there that it doesn't have to be like this for the Giants with just one simple move, one change.
Bring Barry Bonds back.
That didn't help them win a World Series at all.
Well, that's true. Help them get to the World Series.
Help them get to the World Series. But they were competitive when Bonds was on the team, yes. But, 2002 was ultimately a disappointing year.
that was a fun year. That was good. I remember watching those games. Come on, you don't have fond memories of the rally monkey? I know you do.
The rally monkey. Never wanted to strangle a monkey more.
No pun intended, I hope. And so the Giants are 7 games back of the wild card right now. So I guess you could say they're in contention, but I don't know, man. There's a lot's going to happen.
My hope is waning for them to make the postseason at this point. And I think that they're a 500 team. They've been a 500 team all year. They have not been able to break through. They have played some good baseball mostly throughout the year.
Yeah,
but
usually when I'm at the game.
You need to go to more games.
Except for when Scherzer's pitching.
But they just don't have it to get them over the hump. And it's not just enough to play good ball. You've got to have a little bit of that magic in there that, you know, things have the ball bounce your way and have the little things go right, the intangibles that make the season.
They could wait another 70 years before they get the World Series again. I think that'll be all right. I'm sure they'll find their magic in 6 or 7 decades. Speaking of... All right, good.
30 years ago.
Yeah, I know. That's another story. Anyway, don't worry. This year, the boys in blue are going to take it back. We have a letter. We have a little email, I should say. We don't get letters anymore. But please write us a letter. That'd be pretty cool. Although it'd probably be strange to actually get a handwritten letter. Anyway, we got
Nick. Just old fashioned, and here we are on
just
podcast
cutting out magazine letters and make it like
old. Oh, we got one of those kind of letters.
Ransom note. The old Riddler, no. Nick in San Francisco says, Saturday, today, is National Baseball Card Day. Hey, oh yeah, that's right. Today is National Baseball Card Day. What were your favorite cards growing up? Oh, that's interesting. Do you have memorable cards or cards that you cherished the most when you were a kid? Do you have like a Willie Mays rookie card or something like that?
No, I don't have anything that special. That would be nice. The closest to that I probably have. I have a second year Wade Boggs.
Oh, that's cool.
Tops. It was an 82 Tops Wade Boggs. It was the second year.
Back when he was still skinny.
Back when he was still skinny and young and full of promise. But
is that your favorite or is that your
most
valuable?
That was probably my closest to having a valuable card.
Really?
You
didn't collect baseball cards?
Oh, I did collect baseball cards. I didn't have anything that was too valuable. I have a few that may be valuable now. I have not looked up any values.
Right.
But my favorite player was Will Clark going up.
Okay.
So I concentrated my collection on Will Clark, and I had quite a few really nice and at the time valuable cards, and I don't believe that they held their value much.
Well, I don't know if any cards hold their value unless they're a Honus Wagner, but you know, I guess I'm sure there's a market out there. I'm pretty sure Beckett's still gets printed, and
Beckett's definitely still gets printed, and it is possible to find, but
Will Clark.
I also have the 86 Bonds rookie.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Oh, well, that's it then, man. That's got to be worth the most for sure.
Well, maybe. Like I said, I haven't looked anything up.
Right.
And he's not in the Hall of Fame yet. So,
right.
If and when he does get enshrined, that card will definitely be quite a bit more valuable. But at this point, they're just pieces of cardboard.
That's true. I think my growing up, my favorite cards certainly weren't the most valuable, I guess.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I had that Bo Jackson rookie card, which was awesome, and I held on to that. But my favorite was Jim Abbott rookie card, because Jim Abbott was my favorite player. Still is. That guy's a badass.
Yeah.
And then I also had a card of him... like a picture from him in the minors when he's actually holding a bat. He's actually at bat. He has a plate appearance or two with one hand, you know, pretty impressive. But he was like the first big leaguer that I actually met when I was a kid, my very first
game.
Awesome. Pretty cool. But yeah, hey, it's National Baseball Card Day. I don't think about baseball cards too often anymore, but you know, if you're a kid and you didn't grow up collecting baseball cards, you're probably a communist. So But I guarantee everybody listening to this show did, so it's okay. I hope. I don't know. Maybe not. Speaking of Bonds in the Hall of Fame, though, you're going somewhere tonight, I believe.
I am tonight.
A certain kind of Hall of Fame.
August 11th, I am going to the Giants game tonight where they will have a pregame ceremony where they will be retiring, number 25. Barry Bonds' number will be put up in the rafters alongside his godfather and Willie McCovey and Orlando Cepeda, Juan Marichal, and all the Giants greats. Long time coming. This is a departure for the Giants. There's some usually requirement to have your number retired with the Giants is to be enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, really? They don't have anybody?
No.
Everybody whose number they retired is in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Wow.
Bonds is an exception. They're starting a PR campaign to get him enshrined into the Hall of Fame. This is a step in doing that and acknowledging the great player that he was, and certainly one of the best Giants ever, and one of the greatest players ever.
Do you think his 10-year limit will expire, and then he'll just get voted in by the players, kind of thing?
You know, it's possible. It is quite possible that is the way that it might happen. Yeah. But you know, anything is possible at this point, and things may change, and the Baseball Writers Association of America
may all die,
may come to their senses, you know, get fresh new blood who look at it from a perspective and not being so jaded. But
I don't know. It's I can't see it happening anytime soon, but I'm sure it will at some point. And again, I think it'll be amongst the guys that played with him, you know. Right. I'm assuming.
And it's not that Barry Bonds isn't in the Hall of Fame. He's just not enshrined in the Hall of Fame. His bust statue is not there, but there's plenty of memorabilia, and his name appears multiple times all over that museum.
Oh, yeah. Well, what is he, like 7-time MVP? How many MVPs did he get?
7 times.
That's insane. Yeah. You know. I'm sure he'll be in there eventually, but then again, that's going to open a whole other can of worms. You know, anyway, speaking of can of worms, the A's got Fernando Rodney from the Twins. I never really liked Rodney. I don't know. He makes me nervous, man, and I like the A's a lot, and the A's have a great bullpen already, and I get it. They're just, you know, they're giving themselves some options by taking him. But he's like 42 years old, 41 years old. He's not having a bad year. He's got like a 3.09 ERA, but like a 1.40 WHIP. That's no good for a reliever. He's got it at over 10 K per nine, but I don't know.
Well, so
know.
Why pick him up? Are they looking for that veteran presence in the bullpen? Well, perhaps being maybe a leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, he is. He is a good clubhouse guy. Supposedly, that's what everybody says. He always comes in a good mood. You know, he's very competitive. I don't like him because the way he wears his hat. I think that's the only reason why. You know, and then the whole bow and arrow thing, whatever. But, hey, you know, if he starts getting some wins for the A's, that'd be pretty cool. But, yeah, I mean, they have, man, they already traded for Familia, Sean Kelly, Mike Fiers they got, you know. So, they're looking good. Fiers obviously can pitch as a starter or a reliever. But I think, no, they're just doing what I was wondering why the Giants weren't doing, which is just, you know, stockpiling dudes that aren't super high-end guys, but high upside for sure.
One thing that the A's have been doing that the Giants haven't been doing is winning baseball games. A's have to acknowledge the A's. They've been
about the hottest team in baseball for the last
month. Not the hottest since the middle of June.
That's right.
And they've been playing. They've worked their way back up. They're now in second place, behind the Houston Astros. only a few games behind the Yankees for the first wild card spot.
Well, they're only a few games behind the Astros.
For the division. Definitely within reach of the division.
Yeah,
so
they're four and a half back.
A's are looking at not just wild card contention, but can they win the division? So they're making moves to see if they can actually overcome the Astros. It might be tough. The Astros are a little bit down right now. They have a few injuries that they're dealing with. Yeah. But
no, it's true. It's that would be the surprise of the year, to say the least, if the A's were able to win the West.
Yeah, if you said the the A's were an 80-90 win team at the beginning of the year, you're a liar.
Or just misinformed. I think most people figure the Angels would have had close to a 90-win season this year.
Yeah, the Angels have been almost a big disappointment as the Giants.
Well, yeah, maybe even more so because they have the best player in baseball and they had the giant two-way star coming in who started the year out great.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mike Trout's on the DL right now with right wrist inflammation. That'll happen. That'll happen when you're swinging for the fences every time, man. That's only the second time in his career he was on the DL. Of course, his first time on the DL cost me a goddamn championship last year. But hey, what are you going to do? Mike
These
Trout
are just fantasies.
Well, yeah. No. Well, yes. Yes. Literally, not figuratively. Sure. Man, tough break for the Dodgers. Of course, you all have seen Kenley Jansen out for possibly a month, they're saying, with some sort of, heartbeat irregularity. Now, it all kind of stemmed from being up in the mountains, being up in Colorado. And Jansen's had some experience, some heart problems in the past. And he's been hospitalized for an irregular heartbeat in both 2011 and 2012. And he had problems at Coors Field in 2012. When he felt the irregular heartbeat during a game, which also feeling out of breath after every pitch he made, you know. And, you know, I was watching Mark DeRosa talk about a similar thing. He had the same little, like, it's not, I don't call it a little surgery. It's a pretty serious surgery.
Yeah, anything
your
involving your heart where they have to open your chest is not a little.
He said he was back in 2 weeks, and it's just something he had when he was younger also, and they say like 90% of the time after this surgery, you don't see any other setbacks or anything.
Was Jansen going to have the surgery?
Yeah, he has to. It's tough, man, and so it's one of those things, you know, I don't know, because Kenley Jansen's from Curacao, so that's an island, and he is used to living at sea level, I'm sure, his entire life, you know, and so when you go up... And
playing in 5,000 feet Los Angeles, he's still basically at sea level.
Exactly.
Yeah, the altitude can do funky things, for sure. And it's serious, and wish the best for him. And it is, it's tough when a player goes out for a non-baseball reason.
Right. I mean, it has something to do with it because he just couldn't catch his breath, essentially.
Well, sure. But, I mean, he wasn't injured while playing. This was something having to do with his health outside of baseball. It's likely if he wasn't a major league star that he would still have some of these issues.
Well, he might not even know. That's the
may
thing.
Not even know, yeah, but it would still be there.
Put your heart or your body into any sort of strenuous work, especially at elevation, you might have this condition and not even know it. But anyway, the Dodgers are now without their closer, obviously, in addition to relievers Cingrani. We got Fields out, Yimi Garcia, Eric Adell, Daniel Hudson. So it may not be out of the question to see the Dodgers maybe bolster up that bullpen in the next couple of days or weeks before August 31st. But really, the only relievers that are kind of out there right now are on AL teams, you know, meaning that the Dodgers would be one of the last clubs that has a chance to claim them. Guys like Sergio Romo, which would be a kind of weird if they got him back again.
It would
but
be
you know
weird.
He's actually doing pretty well this year. Jim Johnson, Tyler Clippard, all AL guys, because so they'll probably get the last chance to claim them just based on waiver priority rules. Fernando Rodney's already gone, and I don't know, man. For NL relievers, I guess you got Bud Norris, Craig Stamen, Jared Hughes, Kirby Yates, but I don't know. We'll see. There's not much out there in terms of NL relievers right now, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Dodgers are still playing pretty good ball, and looks like their bats are coming back to life, so hopefully that's enough to get them past this 3 to 4 week hump. Hopefully Kenley Jansen's back and fully recovered within 4 weeks, but, you know, we don't know.
And Arizona's come on strong as of late as well, and has tied with Dodgers as of this morning.
That's right. Yeah, it's all right. I'm not worried.
Still not worried? Okay. Testing your resolve here.
Yeah. Although, you know, the Well, yeah, I think the Diamondbacks have a much easier next month and a half. They have an easier schedule finishing off the season than the Dodgers do. So, but they do have the series at the end of September, September 24th through the 26th, where against the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks do, which could and hopefully should be meaningless. Hopefully the West will be already clinched by then, but that could be a very,
it could be a very, very interesting series.
Yeah. And then if they are still close after that series, of course, the last series of the year for the Dodgers is up in San Francisco against the Giants. So the Giants could potentially
play spoiler,
right? Yeah, they could have a huge impact into what happens. So I'm not going to go to any of those games, because if I did, that would definitely not help. Yeah, the Giants, the Dodgers have a tough go coming up. I don't know. But, you know, we'd have to look back to the 2006 Yankees to find the last club who won six straight division titles. So Dodgers almost there. They got five in a row, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to make it number six. We'll see.
They definitely got some competition this year.
They do. And looks like the last night, Friday night, the Red Sox have officially eliminated the Orioles from the division win. The Orioles are out of the division. They can still make a wild card race if they win the next 35 games straight. We'll see. Maybe not. But yeah, that's pretty brutal when it's like not even mid-August and you've already been eliminated from your division.
Yeah, it's a sign of a not
bad
a very
team.
Good year. A bad team, yes. At 35-81, they are 33 games back for the wild card.
And it looks like Boston probably going to be beating them again right now. It looks like David Price is pitching a shutout right now. He's looking pretty good. I'm sure he's not going to go all the way. He's only the fifth inning. He's already got like 70 pitches. But anyway, enough with the American League. I'm more worried about Steven Strasburg. I don't care about the Nationals, really. I mean, they're not... everybody's been waiting for them to make that push. It looks like... I don't know, man. I don't think they're going to be able to do it. Because Strasburg, he was killing me right now this year because he's on my fantasy team, of course, and that was a huge mistake. But what are you gonna do? He's still out with the neck issues. He's going to throw a high intensity 60 pitch bullpen session today. If that goes well, he'll throw a simulated game next Wednesday and then make a rehab start. But I mean, we don't even know how many rehab starts he's gonna make. He's made just three starts over the last 9 weeks, so it's gonna have to be a few rehab starts probably, which is just God, it's killing me, and I'm sure it's killing all the East Coast National League fans as well. But on that note, Max Scherzer has a 6-game hitting streak, and he's batting 300 for the year.
Right. Well, you know, Washington is an interesting team this year. They had high expectations. They
got a good team on paper.
They've got a great team on paper, but their best player, arguably at least the second best player in the league, Bryce Harper, is not having a great year.
Yeah, he's not even close to the second best player in the league this year. Max Scherzer is better. He's hitting higher average. He's got a 6-game hitting streak. You know, he's knocking in runs.
But they did have a game a couple weeks ago where they did actually wake up and scored the most runs in a single game for their franchise history, going back to the Montreal days.
Was it like 25 or something? What was that?
Yeah, 25-4 over the hapless Mets.
That's right. And I'm pretty sure in that game, Bryce Harper got zero RBI somehow. I'm pretty sure he went like 1-for-5 or something. That doesn't even make sense.
It wasn't noted. No, he contributed to the hit parade. But
I don't know.
He wasn't the most significant contributor.
No.
But he did contribute, and I didn't note. Bryce Harper's involvement in that game and
it
his
was
particular
lacking.
Stats.
It was lacking.
Okay,
was like,
well,
it's all right. But
I was more interested in the Mets.
Oh.
And finding about the Mets is first time in the Mets history that they had trailed by 20 runs.
I find that hard to believe. The Mets used to be really bad. I mean, they're really bad now. But that's the first time ever that they've been trailing by 20 runs.
It's the first
runs.
Time ever in Mets history that they've been. And, you know, they I guess they got all of their good baseball out of the way early. they started the season on fire those first 2-3 weeks. And then all of a sudden, it was less of a fizzle and more of a just blink.
It was a lot more realistic baseball for them. I don't think anybody figured that they were going to continue that 9-1 record that they, I believe, started off with. But
game after the shellacking by the Nationals.
You're a goddamn disgrace. Yeah.
Shout out to Jose Reyes for making some history.
God, he looked terrible on the mound. You're talking about when he came up to the mound, right?
I am. Well, in that game, the 25-4 game, Jose Reyes, you know, gave up multiple home runs while pitching, and the next day he got up and hit to himself and became the first player Major League history to give up to multiple and then hit in his next start in the next game.
That's pretty crazy. 52 now. That is now 52 position players to get onto that pitcher's mound. That's insane. It's
who needs a DH?
Well,
let him play.
Is this going to be a trend? Are we going to be seeing this from now on? Or is this just... There's so many lopsided games. Because it's not even just when it's a lopsided game.
It hasn't been. No, well, yeah.
Sometimes I think the Cubs were winning and then they brought in a position player to pitch. I mean, it's not even just when you're losing by 20 runs. It's pretty insane.
Well, Kenley Jansen came in. The game was tied. Well,
Kenley Jansen?
Kike Hernandez.
Oh, Kike. Yeah, that's right. I was like,
game was still on the line. They were in extra innings. They just ran out of pitchers.
Right. Yeah. No, so that makes sense. If it's the 16th inning or whatever, we've seen that before. But now it's happening within the first 9, which is really strange. But anyway, speaking of something strange in the bullpen, man, it's kind of the end of an era here. I mean, we might see a bounce back, but I don't know. King Felix to the bullpen.
King Felix to the bullpen. Man,
that's tough.
Those words sound very foreign to me.
It's very weird. I never thought I'd actually say that.
Any Seattle fans in our audience who can give us any insight into what's going on?
Well,
email
look,
us.
I mean, I mean, come on, he's not being good. Like, look at his line on Tuesday against Texas. He had 6 inning pitch. Okay, that's not bad. 8 hits. Okay. 11 runs, 7 of them earned. Okay. 4 walks, only 2 Ks, 3 home runs, a hit by pitch. It's tough, man. He's just the third pitcher ever to give up 11 runs after at any time winning a Cy Young Award. Can you name the other two? I bet you can name one of the other two. It's close to home.
After winning a Cy Young and giving
at
up 11 runs?
Yeah. It's only happened twice in history where a former Cy Young winner has given up 11 runs.
Well, I guess the first name that comes to mind would be the venerable Barry Zito.
Yeah, ding, ding, ding. Right on the money. Yep, Barry Zito and then Rick Porcello last year, actually. Yeah, that was a meteoric decline, actually. From Rick Porcello. Barry Zito, though, still had some good years after that. But it's kind of interesting to think that... I guess it makes sense. I mean, just to win any Cy Young, you have to be consistently good. And chances are you're not going to give up 11 runs. It's pretty insane. Right. But, you know,
let alone on 8 hits. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty... Because it's just those home runs. He's only 32 years old, man. It's crazy, you know? But his fastball velocity is... just not coming back. It's below 90 on average now. And he's essentially stopped throwing it. He's not even really throwing that anymore. His sinker ball isn't sinking. It's just going right down the middle. Batters are hitting .335 and slugging .559 against it this year. Against his sinker. He still has a great curve and a pretty good changeup, but if it's, you know, if his fastball isn't that fast, then changeup isn't going to be changing that much. I don't know. I mean, dude,
if he lost the movement on his sinker, then, you know, that's a big problem.
We got a little clip just from Scott Service here talking about Felix to the bullpen, because I honestly I didn't believe it, but hey, what are you gonna do? That's times are changing.
I had an opportunity to sit down with Felix later today, you know, after we had met earlier, and explained to him that you know, thought was best for him in the ball club at this point, for him to slide to the bullpen, and you know, there's been a lot going on with Felix. I think a lot of, you know, pressure, whatever you call it, everybody's expectations, where it's at. He's done an unbelievable job as a Mariner, and certainly don't take any of this lightly, but I just think trying to make the best decisions for the ball club, and really the best decision for Felix at this point, let's just take a breath, step back, gather yourself. I still think there's a chance, you know, possibly, you know, he'll let us know, you know, how he performs out there, but, you know, could get back into the rotation. But for right now, where a ball club's at, just to kind of let him take a deep breath and then go from there. So he will be in the bullpen as of now.
And that's brutal. You know, I mean, from 2009 to 2014, he was really the best pitcher in the American League.
Yeah, there are very few pitchers at all that were better than him.
No, I mean, that's one of the most dominant five-year spans. He made the All-Star team in 5 out of those 6 years. And the year he didn't make the All-Star team, he ended up winning the Cy Young. he finished
consolation
second.
Consolation prize.
Yeah. It's just nuts, man. He was always so fun to watch. So hopefully we'll see him back. But I don't know. You know, maybe he's hurt. Maybe he's hurt and he just doesn't want to tell anybody. He hasn't wanted to say anything. You know, I mean, that happens. You know, it must be tough to be so dominant and then just
lose it all of a sudden.
And he's not even that old. I mean, 32 isn't young for a Major League Baseball player, but I mean, come on, you know, that's
no, but 32 seems to be the year that most players, pitchers and position players, start to show a little decline.
It is pretty tough. I don't know. Well, on the opposite note, how about Juan Soto? Jesus Christ, he's killing the ball right now.
Yeah,
man.
He is
insane. I remember giving some advice and about pick up Juan Soto in your fantasy league, and then I just didn't do it like an idiot. and now look at him. I should start listening to my own advice. At least
picking it up and then giving the advice.
Right, exactly. I mean, but who knew? It's insane. So it's August 11th. He's 19 years old, but so far this year he already has more home runs with 14 than Chris Bryant or Ryan Braun. He has a higher slugging percentage at .551 than Aaron Judge or Manny Machado. He has virtually the same on-base percentage as Joey Votto, over .420, and has Giancarlo Stanton beaten OPS by over 100 points, .975. It's insane.
That's a player. That's an impressive list of players that he has competitive stats with.
Crazy. He's easily the greatest teenager ever in Major League Baseball.
So this is rookie year or is his second year?
No, this is rookie year.
Yeah, so are we looking at the rookie of the year?
Well, I don't know if he's going to have enough plate appearances, but yeah, I mean, I guess. I'm sure. I think he will. I mean, who else could be in the American League? Oh, I'm sorry, in the National League. Who else? What are the rookies out there?
Well, there's the kid in Atlanta.
Albies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
He's been good all year as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's a young club. That's pretty tight. Well, so easily the greatest teenage season ever. Possibly one of the greatest just all-time lefty against lefty seasons ever. But so right now, Mel Ott essentially had all the teenage MLB records.
Mel Ott, another number up there that Barry Bonds is going to go up next to today.
Wow. So Soto's OPS .975 right now. Mel Ott's was .921, and that was the record. It's 1928. All these records are from 28. His OBP .423. Mel Ott's was under 4. His OPS plus .157. Mel Ott had .139. It's just crazy, man. His numbers are nuts. Man. But it's not even just as a teenager. He's a lefty, and his numbers against lefties are some of the greatest that the game has ever seen, not even just teenagers, just really in general. His .975 OPS, okay, you look back at other guys who weren't even teenagers, but, you know, at least in their rookie year, Or I guess let's just say teenagers then, in that sense. So Ken Griffey Jr., 748. Mickey Mantle, 792. None of them even have an 800. Al Kaline, 652. Ty Cobb, 749. I mean, Juan Soto's at 975 right now. It's unbelievable.
And how many at-bats does he have?
That's a good question. He will I'm sure he will have enough by the end of the season, but...
And
Albies was injured for some time there, too, so...
Right.
Could catch up. Let me see here. Anyway, yeah, his numbers against lefties are insane. He has 246 at-bats, Juan Soto does. Batting 309 right now. It's just crazy. But yeah, so he's a lefty. His numbers against lefties, he's hitting 371. I mean, he is a lefty.
Wow.
He's got a 1.144 OPS. Anyway, the only other left-handed hitters that have ever had a season in which they slugged 694 against lefties are Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr., Larry Walker, Stan Musial. I mean, that's quite a list. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And just barely off that list is Ted Williams with 691. So, that'll be interesting to see what happens with him and if the Nationals are going to be rebuilding after this year. I mean, they kind of already have, right? I don't know, man. It's tough to see them just really struggle when they have some of the best players in baseball on their team, but they just can't seem to get it together. Must be something in that clubhouse ain't right. It's a little sour. I don't know what's going on in there.
I don't know what's going on there either. It definitely seems to be something going on. This is manager's first year.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they should have got rid of Dusty Baker. Maybe they should have kept him in there.
Keep all those kids in line. Certainly heard that thrown around before, too, that Bryce Harper seems to do what he wants. They didn't move him to get some prospects for him, get some Probably value for him. Well, it depends. I think they might be holding holding on to hope that they'll be able to re-sign him come the off season.
But, I mean, it's possible, but if they don't even make the postseason this year, I don't know how excited he would be to return to the Nationals, you know, especially if there's a lot of money on the table somewhere else. I mean, it seems like the best teams have the most money anyway, so it's not like he's going to have to go to the Rays or something. The Rays aren't going to shell out $300-400 million. So, I don't know. This offseason will be really interesting.
Yeah.
You got Machado, you got Harper. I mean, it's going to be pretty crazy. Speaking of offseason, how about Rick Ankiel come back? Have you seen this?
I haven't seen anything for it. I did read a couple of snippets about his comeback.
Mr. Yips trying to make a comeback next year. He told a Fox Sports Midwest audience on a pregame show before the Cardinals game Monday that his little one-batter stint in the Bluegrass World Series, I don't even know what that is, but it's a semi-pro type of tournament, encouraged him to try to make a comeback. He's 39 years old, so, I mean, you know, he was a solid pitcher before the Yips. Of course, the Yips ultimately ended his pitching career. Then he played the outfield for another 4 or 5 years with the Cardinals. He had a great arm, but... He was a number one overall prospect in 2000 or 99. I don't know. He said, quote, "The game has swung back to my style of pitching, big curveballs and fastballs up." It's kind of true. You know, dudes are swinging at everything. So if you still have a pitch like that, big swooping curve and a big high fastball, kind of reminds me of maybe like a Nathan Eovaldi right now. I mean, besides Eovaldi's last start, he's just been lights out, you know, and he's got that. And he's a righty. So, but he's got that big, big swinging curveball that's just dominant against right-handed batters. And then he also has that high cheese. It's like a laser, you know, 98, 99. I don't think Rick Ankiel is going to be throwing 98 or 99, but hey, I don't know. I mean, if he's set the last 10 years off, maybe his arm is fully rested. Is that enough time to rest your arm?
It might very well be. And maybe... And speaking of players coming back, have we heard anything about the great Rafael Palmeiro comeback?
I saw him hit a home run. in a minor league game. I think it was like an A. I don't even know. He looks old, though.
He is old.
He looks like an old coach. I mean, he's 49 or something, right? Man. That's pretty insane. But hey, you know, look, Bernard Hopkins fought a light heavyweight match when he was 49 against the crusher, Sergey Kovalev, who was easily the best at that time because Andre Ward wasn't fighting. But anyway, and he went the distance. He didn't even get knocked out. He got knocked down. But, you know, it's 49 doesn't mean the end of your athletic career. Maybe should, but
but boxing is also different than baseball.
Yeah, you're getting hit
in many different ways.
Nonstop. You're getting crushed. Especially when the guy's name is The Crusher. Anyway, The Crusher just got crushed last weekend, though, actually. Anyway, that's a different podcast. That's the boxing podcast, which we are going to start pretty soon. But, yeah, man, dude. Okay, so you have, for me, the Ig Nobel Award of the Week.
Yes, we slightly hinted at this. But this was Tuesday night. The Giants lost to the Astros in the top of the ninth. Well, they lost in the bottom of the ninth because they were at home. But in the top of the ninth, they blew the save that would otherwise give them a win. And it was their major league leading 25th blown save this
25th
season.
Blown save? Now, I didn't believe this.
25
I didn't believe you
when
you told me that. I thought that was crazy. I had to look it up.
And, I was blown away by it too. I thought it was crazy myself.
But you are not lying.
I'm not lying, and it is highly frustrating because this is what it said. They've been playing good ball. They've been in a position to win 25 times in the ninth inning.
What could you have done with those 25 extra wins? Could you imagine? Hey,
25 extra
even
wins.
Half?
Yeah. But let's be generous here. Let's flip a coin on it. Let's go with 50% better with closing out saves and only give them 13 extra wins.
They'd be up in the West by 7 games if they they only got half.
And as of today, all else being equal with those 13 wins, they would today have a record of 71-46, which would be fourth best in the majors.
Tell that to the $62 million man, Mark Melanson.
Oh, Melanson moan.
It's pretty brutal. But it's not even just him. Hunter Strickland, obviously, breaking his hand after his last blown save. He's got 4 blown saves. Reyes Moronta, 4 blown saves. Sam Dyson, 4 blown saves. Mark Melanson, 4 blown saves. I think you see a pattern here.
Yeah, this is a pattern. No one has been consistent. And closing out games.
Oh, no, they've been consistent.
Consistently
at
poor.
Blowing game. That's very consistent. They all have 4.
So it's very frustrating. The Giants seem to not be as bad as their record overall. But
it's hard to, yeah,
When it comes to the bullpen and the closer slot, yeah, the year could be a lot better if even they were just 50% better.
That's all it takes. 50%.
50% better.
You would even settle for 30% and they'd still be in first place. If
yeah.
The season is even halfway over and
it's almost two-thirds the way through.
But the
now.
Fact that
yeah.
they've, I mean, so they've led in blown saves a couple times, 2005 and 2016, but they've already blown more saves than they did in those two seasons.
Right.
So there's still more to come, I guess, you know. At this point, are you just hoping for a 500 year at the end of the year? I mean, would that be...
Well, I mean, 500 year is an improvement over last year. And that's the best
that's
thing that I can say about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But at you know, when it comes right down to it, you have to ask yourself the question, would you rather have the team that you root for be a 500 team or be a terrible team?
How about a good team? Is that an option?
Well, of course it's an option, but
right.
given of course everyone would like to be rooting for a good team. But between a average team and a horrible team,
well, okay, yeah. I guess
which is
Well, actually,
more palatable.
If I'm being honest, I'm going to say bad team because then at least the ticket prices are cheaper. Because you know? Well, a loss is a loss. You know,
sure. And you know what to expect. It's very frustrating not knowing if they're going to be able to hold on to win,
right?
Or even spark enough offense to win. Even last night's game against Pittsburgh.
It was a win.
They scored 13 runs.
They gave up 10, though.
They
right?
also gave up 10. Yeah. They tried their hardest to lose that game. What's going on? I'd much rather have them made moves to move some pieces, restock the cupboard, and let's go get them next year. But
yeah, I feel like they should have made a move on Kinsler. Before the Cubs got him, that reliever. That could have helped. But then again, I don't know, man. I mean, they're in a pitcher's park. They shouldn't be blowing this many saves. It's pretty crazy. Well, anyway, on a lighter note, and on a pretty optimistic note here, look at Jose Ramirez, man. He will be the first guy to break the 30-30 spell, or drought, I should say, since 2012, since Trout had 30 stolen bases and 49 home runs. And, of course, making a strong case for himself as MVP. Jose Ramirez has 33 home runs through today. I mean, he might even get another one today. Put him two behind J.D. Martinez for the AL lead. And his 27 steals put him one ahead of D. Gordon for the top spot. So he's already leading in steals. He could very well be getting close to leading in home runs. I mean, I don't know if he'll finish better than J.D., but he's certainly going to be in the 30-30 club. Red Sox, Mookie Betts is probably going to do it, too. He's already got 27 homers and 22 steals. Trout's got 30 homers, 21 steals. Baez even has 25, 19 steals. But Ramirez is best positioned to get there, and quickly. I mean, he might even do it by the end of this series coming up. When he does, he'll be only the fifth switch hitter to reach this mark, including Jimmy Rollins in 07, Beltran in 04. Jose Cruz Jr. in 01, and Howard Johnson. Actually, he did it three times, 87, 89, 91. He would also be the game's first 30-30 man since, of course, Trout in 2012, man. That's five-season drought. I think it's only happened like one in the season history where there wasn't somebody with 30-30, but this sort of ties into what we were talking about last week, which is that nobody is stealing bases
right.
anymore.
The stealing bases seems to be a lost art or a forgotten art.
Right. It's, yeah, or just a... I don't know. It's an art that a lot of the coaches maybe aren't willing to gamble on. But, there's also an outside chance that Ramirez could become only the fifth 40-40 man in MLB history.
That would be impressive.
That would be very impressive. And, at this pace, good. It's very realistic.
Yeah. It is that rare combination of power and speed and the willingness to take that base.
And if he could somehow pass J.D. Martinez in home runs and lead in steals, that he would be the fourth player in history to do that, to lead the league in homers and steals. Only Ty Cobb in 09, Chuck Klein in 32, and Jimmy Sheckard of 1903 of the Brooklyn Superbas, later the Dodgers, of course. But, it hasn't happened since 1932 where somebody has done both of those things. Not even Barry did it. That's kind of surprising. But or Griffey, for that matter. But then again, they were playing in the Ricky Henderson days, so that's
right.
It's kind of tough.
And different era as well. There were more Steelers.
Yeah, there's more importance on that. But that would be super cool, man. 40-40, what did he have, like 9 home runs just 2 years ago, Jose Ramirez? And he's always been a doubles machine. But now he's just real.
Is it the launch angle factor that has turned his doubles into home runs, or is it
based on
something
else? The advanced statistics? It looks like he's just more aggressive. I don't even think it's launch angle. He's just more,
going after it more.
Yeah, and also shortening up his swing. I mean, that's also why he's hitting for average as well. Not unlike J.D. Martinez, right? J.D. Martinez will put one through the hole if there's runners on base. He's not always swinging for the fences, and that's why he's arguably the greatest hitter in baseball right now, even better than Trout. But Ramirez is making a pretty damn good case for MVP, and if the season were to end right now, it would be Ramirez's, 100%. I mean, again, Mookie Betts and JD Martinez have a lot to say about that. JD already has 100 RBIs and over 30 home runs. I mean, if he were to stop right now, he would have an incredible season. But Ramirez is the best all-around player. I mean, his doubles, his walk-to-strikeout ratio.
And how much is Arizona missing that?
Oh.
I mean, how far ahead? They're tied with the Dodgers right now.
Right.
But how many more games would they have won if they had JD this year doing what he's doing?
Oh, yeah. Remember, he hit 29 home runs for them in half a season last year. I mean, it's insane. And he's better this year. So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know why they didn't even try. Well, I guess they tried to make a play for Machado because that would have helped them a lot also. But that just comes down to who's in your system, and everybody wants the Dodgers system for some reason. We usually have
some good prospects.
Really good prospects.
So many years with the Rookie of the Year coming out of the Dodgers system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have the most in history. Pretty sure. And also the most no-hitters in history. Hey, so anyway. Moving on. I don't know. We'll see. And how about Matt Carpenter, man? I'm pretty surprised.
Matt Carpenter killing it out of seemingly nowhere.
I mean, it kind of seems like that. Yeah, he was hitting like .140 up through like May 10th or something. And now he's leading all the National League in home runs, leading all the National League in slugging, leading all the National League in OPS, and it's in second place with doubles. It's crazy. He's got 32 home runs. Where did that come from? Well, he had like 7 in a 3-game period. That helped, but man, that's insane.
And, of course, we have to shout out this podcast's favorite player, Big Sexy, Bartolo Colon, hitting a career milestone, making a name for himself, becoming the winningest pitcher of Latin descent.
He really is. He passed every Latin pitcher.
He's passed every Latin pitcher on the all-time wins list.
That's incredible.
He earned just the other night his 246th win. That is now one more than the great Dennis Martinez.
Oh, yeah.
I was from Nicaragua.
Nicaragüense.
Played for the Montreal Expos. 245 wins.
Montreal.
Montreal.
I like that. That was easy. Rolled off the tongue. Nicely done. That's pretty crazy, because then I was wondering about Pedro. How many did Pedro have?
Pedro is 219.
That's it?
And that
I mean, that's a lot, but I mean, you know, he was arguably the most dominant pitcher in the American League back then, except for maybe Randy Johnson.
It is surprising that total seems so low as compared to, well, Colon, who his first win was June 7th, 1997.
Jesus. The year Juan Soto was born. That's insane.
But Dennis Martinez and
El Presidente.
Juan Marichal, 245 and 243, respectively. And then Luis Tiant.
Luis Tiant, that's right.
From Cuba, 229 wins, all more than Pedro Martinez.
That's crazy. Huh. Well, hey, what are you going to do? That's pretty good. Shout out to Big Sexy there. I know you're a loyal listener. Now, I'm curious about Josh Donaldson, man. Do you think, well, I mean, let's say he does, you know, he's still out with like the left calf strain, and I'm sure that's pretty tough, but it doesn't seem like, it seems like he could come back and by August 31st. Do you expect to see him going to a contending team?
Well,
maybe the Indians, maybe, you know? I mean,
the Indians, yeah, they definitely could use the extra outfielder.
Well, no, I mean, as a third baseman, you can move Ramirez to second base, you can move Kipnis to the outfield. I don't think Josh Donaldson's going to be running a lot in the outfield, but I mean, it's interesting because he's not really getting a lot of attention right now, and he should be getting off the DL within the next 2 weeks, and that will still be within the deadline. And Toronto has pretty much given up everybody anyway. So, yeah, it could be, I mean, I don't know. It's all still up in the air, obviously. But, come on, as a former MVP, I mean, he could be a huge jumpstart to
What was his year before he went on the DL this last time? What is he?
Not good. not good. Yeah. But again, he still has it in him.
That might, yeah, he still has it in him. But he hasn't had that kind of a year this year.
No, no, definitely not.
And maybe
not.
That's why there isn't a lot of interest. Maybe in the offseason we'll hear more of Josh Donaldson's
name. I don't know, man.
I'm,
so Cleveland has first chance to claim him off waivers. I would not be surprised if they did get him. I mean, they probably wouldn't even have to give up much. But I don't know. We'll see. It could also be Red Sox. I don't know. Could be the Cubs even. You know, who knows about Chris Bryant? You know, he's on and off, on and off. Maybe even the Braves. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I'm just curious because I haven't really heard anybody talking about this. And he should be back pretty soon. Maybe not soon, but by the end of the month. And again, he's still Josh Donaldson. You know, he still could be good for at least 5 postseason home runs, even if he's just batting off the bench, you know?
Yeah. Or a DH for an American League team.
Right, exactly. Again, Indians. And now I saw Encarnacion messed up his bicep or something yesterday on a bad swing. So he's out right now. Mm. He's getting MRI, and he's essentially their DH. So, yeah, man, it could be weird. And also, we have to remember, like, the Indians are going to clinch, like, in a couple weeks or, you know, like, by, like, mid-September, I'm sure they'll have clinched. And so they're just going to be coasting. And so that could potentially, I don't know, maybe the Red Sox too, you know, make them a little bit lazier.
It's
and
a little bit
jump start.
Yeah, it's still a little bit early to start talking magic numbers. But
well, no, the Indians will be the first team to clinch in any division. They will easily be the first team to clinch. And when you clinch that early, who knows?
Their number as of right now is 37. And you're looking at the Boston at 38.
Yeah. But their division is so weak. Central, American League Central, you know. Anyway, I'm kind of curious. I have to look at the rest of their schedule, but I think it's pretty decent. Anyway, I'd be surprised if they weren't the first team to clinch. Again, the Red Sox are kind of unconscious right now. They're just going nuts, so it's possible they do it. They are, what, 10 above or 8? 8 or 10 above the Yankees right now?
Nine games as of today.
9, that's right. Well, anyway, I think... Well, there's still more. We'll be back next week. But for now, we are going to... what was last week's trivia question, if you can refresh my memory?
Well, last week's
Trivia question.
Here, let me find it here amongst my notes here.
Please do.
It was around another Rookie of the Year contender, Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
That's right.
Became
that's right.
the second rookie to have 10 consecutive multi-hit games in his rookie season.
10 consecutive multi-hit games.
Yeah. Wow. So only one other person who has done it in history in their rookie season. Who was that player?
All right, we'll go to the mailbag here. We got, rookie season, 10 multi-hit games.
Consecutive?
Wow.
Consecutive.
Oh, I think I had an answer last week that I didn't. Yeah. I'm going to hold on to that. Bradley in Cupertino says Manny Ramirez. Ooh, that's a good answer.
Manny Ramirez. Yeah. Great player.
That's not what I was thinking, but that's a good answer. Shit. Is that it?
It is. No, it's not.
Oh, strike one. All right. Travis in Burlingame says Ken Griffey Jr.
Another great guess. But no, I would contend that it is, this man is one of the most famous men in baseball history and is not played in
long time.
A very long time.
Okay, so I was thinking one guy, because when I think rookie seasons, I always just think of one guy, because he still has he's still, I think, maybe the greatest hitter of all time, but we'll never really know. I'm thinking Shoeless Joe Jackson.
It was indeed Shoeless Joe Jackson in 1911. Yes.
Yeah, 1911. You know, in that his rookie year, he hit 400. He's the only player in history to bat 400 their rookie season. And then he did it like 10 years or say eight years later.
Right.
He batted 400 twice in his career. Now, Ted Williams did that. But he did not do that as a rookie. It's just insane. It's crazy. Right. And so, yeah, so whenever I think about great rookie seasons, I always think about the great Shoeless Joe. Man, was he the greatest hitter of all time? Possibly. We'll never know. Everybody that saw him play said, including Ty Cobb, said he was the greatest hitter that they'd ever seen. And even when he supposedly threw the World Series with the entire Black Sox team or the White Sox team in the Black Sox scandal, he still batted like .348 with like two home runs and two triples or something you'd say like that. So if that's you throwing a game or throwing a series, well, then you just might be the greatest hitter of all time. You know? He's like, oh yeah, I would have bat .580, but they told me not to. Anyway, all right, well there we go. Shoeless Joe, keep that in your memory banks. What do you got for me this week?
This week, I've got something a little bit different. But, I hate to do this to us and West Coast bias, but...
Uh-oh.
Interesting stat nonetheless. There have only been 3 Red Sox in history and 2 hit 3 home runs in a game against... the Yankees.
There have only been 3 Red Sox in history to hit 3 home runs against the Yankees.
Right, and one just happened last week. It's 100 years on the 2nd of August, 2018. One just happened. So there's only been 3 Red Sox to hit homer 3 times in one game against the Yankees.
Was that Benintendi or JD?
No, it wasn't.
Who was that last
week? It was Steve Pierce. Went 3-for-5 with 6 RBIs.
Jesus. That flew under the radar. Well, East Coast, what are you going to do? Steve Pierce. I thought he was still an Oriole. All right, I'm out of the game. All right. Sorry, East Coast fans, but sorry, not sorry. You know what?
Sorry, not sorry.
So wait, so this has only happened 3 other times or 2 other
two
times?
Only 2 other times.
Really?
Really.
In over a century.
And over a century.
And all the matchups that they've had.
And all the great hitters.
Wow.
Only three total. Okay. 2 others.
I'm just thinking of the Bronx Bombers. Red Sox against the Yankees. That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. And specifically against, there's probably been many Red Sox who have hit 3 home runs in a game,
right,
but not specifically against the Yankees.
Interesting. Alrighty. Well,
chew on that for the week.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave a comment on the Podomatic website, Facebook, Instagram. I don't know. I don't think we're there yet.
We're not on Instagram yet. Facebook, West Coast Bias Baseball.
Give us a shout out. Give us your answers. Okay. We will supply you with beer if you make the trip up north or south if you're listening in Seattle.
Just through the city if you're, live locally.
We need somebody to guess one of these right, so come on.
That isn't Adam. I mean, it's
there are no wrong answers. Well, there are wrong answers, but it's okay.
There are no bad answers.
Well, there are, but it's okay. So just, give us a shout. BaseballShowPodcast@gmail.com. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.
No, I am tonight.